Consequence Podcast Network.
This week, on The Sidetrack, we listened to a feature-length audio commentary for a 2010 film that the New York Times' A.O. Scott wrote was a film that posed a philosophical question fundamental to our inquiry here, namely, why does this film exist? It's none other than the cult classic, MacGruber. We'll be joined by television writer and internet personality, Alex Blagg. That's this week on The Sidetrack. Well, hello and welcome back to yet another feature-length audio commentary here on The Sidetrack. It's me, your host, Paul Davidson, and this week we get into the lunacy, the craziness, the hilarity of none other than 2010's MacGruber, starring Will Forte, and commentated by none other than television writer Alex Blagg. Now, if you don't know Alex, you know of many of the projects he's been involved with. He's been a writer on everything from Workaholics to Splitting Up Together to the recent show Trinkets on Netflix. But in addition to that, he was one of the co-creators, writers, and producers for the show At Midnight with Chris Hardwick on Comedy Central, which ran for quite some time, which we'll talk about on the other episode this week, the interview with Mr. Alex Blagg. Ironically, the connections here are worthy of a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon conversation, but I'll keep it high level for you. Not only have I known Alex Blagg from, God, back in the day when the blogosphere was actually a term people used, but in addition to that, Mr. Will Forte and myself, who will not be appearing on either of these episodes, actually went to the same high school. Irony? Perhaps. In any case, MacGruber, if you have been living in a hole for 3 decades, was an SNL sketch ideated by none other than Yorma Taccone, one-third of The Lonely Island, pitched to Will Forte, who thought it was idiotic, and then turned into a sketch, which was turned into a Super Bowl spot, which was turned into a cult classic movie that did not deliver box office that even exceeded its paltry budget of $10 million. But it became a cult classic, and now, as we sit here listening to this podcast, is being written and being prepared for its sequel to be filmed. So things worked out for MacGruber, and if you haven't seen the film, it is hilarious. So go get the film, cue it up, and let's sit back and listen to Alex Blagg's feature-length audio commentary of MacGruber here on The Sidetrack.
Okay, MacGruber, here we go. Even though this is one of my favorite movies, I just realized I haven't seen this in a while. When it came out, I went on this weird college tour with the guys that made it to show it and screen it at a bunch of colleges across the country. So I saw it over the course of a week, like, I don't know, I think 5 or 6 times, like every night after night. And so maybe I didn't want to watch it again for a while. I don't know. I think I did watch it, though, when it came out first on DVD or whatever. But it's been a minute, so I'm excited to revisit one of my all-time favorite comedies. And I think in general, just like one of the most underrated and overlooked movies. Now it feels like it's kind of found its audience of fellow devotees such as myself who have come to appreciate what's so great about it. But at the time, definitely, as MacGruber would say, fart in the wind. I love that we open on a bloody battlefield. The guy passed out dead in the desert. Feels very intense. Like we're watching a real action movie. I think that's part of what makes this movie so good is the fidelity that it has to the kinds of movies that it's parodying. I mean, this could be a Michael Bay movie, a Paul W.S. Anderson movie, a minor Ridley Scott movie. We don't know at this point. We just know that a crew is trying to pull off a job in what seems to be a very hot desert with a lot of firepower. I mean, this is almost like the opening of The Dark Knight. I wouldn't be surprised if Christopher Nolan was heavily inspired by this opening of MacGruber and that his bank heist sequence in Dark Knight was actually just an homage to this. Oh, and there we have it. The dramatic entrance of Val Kilmer. I would say this might be Val Kilmer's last great role. At least the last one I can remember. I mean, he's truly one of the all-time greats, but his work as the bad guy in MacGruber is, for me, up there as some of his finest. He's just perfect. It was amazing casting. Fearsome, brutal. We know that MacGruber is up against a serious criminal mastermind. I love how, you know, MacGruber obviously started on SNL as like a parody of MacGyver, which was a very specific thing. But what's cool about this movie is it takes that idea and expands it into this, like, there's the saxophone, expands it into the world of the kind of, like, 90s forgotten action cinema of, you know, your Steven Seagals, your Jean-Claude Van Damme's, these kind of, you know, trashy, somewhat low budget, but still super watchable and super fun movies. And I don't feel like that was ever a part of the sketches on SNL. And I think that was like a really interesting and smart way to take the MacGruber character out of the sketches and frame it into something more cinematic by taking this kind of forgotten art form of the 90s, you know, action B movie, like Under Siege, Hard Kill, Hard Target, you know, I'm missing. So Lionheart. and Powers Booth, another great heavy, doing fine work here. Philippi, also underrated, I think, as the straight guy, but playing a comedic straight guy, which was, again, I think a secret ingredient of this movie is the casting. It was like unconventional choices, but very smart. I love that we find MacGruber meditating in a temple. The mysterious mystic that he is. Such a good intro. The classic action movie dick measuring contest where the two tough guys rattle off their resumes to each other. MacGruber's out of the game. He's a peaceful man, a man of the people. This is what they call in the biz the call to adventure. And the MacGuffin, the MacGruber MacGuffin. There's something about X5 nuclear something or another's that have been stolen by Val Kilmer, which we've seen already. MacGruber's going to have to search deep inside himself to decide if he's ready to return to his life of violent adventure. But he made a promise to himself. He's a wounded hero. This is so good. I mean, this is even this, it's like such a specific trope and scene that we've seen in these movies so many times. The refusal of the call to adventure. And just like how arbitrary that is in so many movies, because the writers are literally just following the formulas of screenwriting gurus and the hero's adventure and taking it too literally. And so you have these moments where there's this like soul searching that just seems unnecessary, where it's like, okay, you're a military expert, tough guy. There's nukes stolen. You got to save the world, man. We all know you're going to save the world. Quit hemming and hawing about it, MacGruber. He's troubled in his bed at night, dreaming of his lost love, Maya Rudolph. It's a nice callback to the sketch on SNL. Fuck you. So funny. I always liked that it took him, that the gravesite was in Pueblo, Colorado, because I think I have like far-flung relatives that live in Pueblo, and that's the only context I ever heard it in until MacGruber, where apparently he keeps all his gear is in a cemetery in Pueblo, Colorado, maybe down the street from my family, I don't know. But he's putting it all back on. He's gonna shave off that mane, that beard. And there he is, folks. MacGruber, back in action. Stock shot of the Pentagon, so we know things have gotten serious. This is the kind of mission briefing scene. I mean, again, it's like the way that you're able to take this character in the sketch and make it work as like an entire movie, which is harder to do, I think, than people realize. Because if you look back at the SNL characters, like even the most beloved ones that have made the jump to features, like I would say most of the time they're not successful. And I think this did it by finding another bigger thing to parody. And it just... so well, it like hits every one of the tropes of these movies, and it ends up kind of telling a story that is at least as good as the average, you know, 90s action film would be, which I think on a, even subconsciously you're actually rooting for him in this adventure, no matter how sort of like absurd and over the top the comedy gets. There's still this kind of like, you know, lizard brain part of you that wants him to you know, get those nukes and save the world. Another thing that I think is interesting just about the character of Cooper is that he's this really weird blend of machismo, tough guy energy with kind of like Will Forte's just inherent Midwestern sweetness with also just being kind of an oblivious idiot at times. That's such a weird, interesting combination that they managed to make work so well in this movie, despite those things seeming like they don't really fit together. I think a lot of that is just Will Forte is so good at what he does. Also, for anybody that is interested, a delightful person. When we were doing this college tour thing, everywhere we would go at these colleges, we would do these giant screenings, and at the end they would all like want to come take selfies and get autographs and talk to him, and he would talk to every single kid in there. And like literally where everyone else is like waiting in the van for 2 hours to, you know, go get dinner or whatever, and Forte is just like making sure that he gives everybody a moment. I was pretty impressed by that. This is one of the best parts of these movies, is the putting the crew together montage. Reuniting with his old team. This guy is just super strong. Frank is in. I love that little homage to Over the Top, the Sylvester Stallone arm wrestling epic. I think that shot is literally the poster of that movie. He's just recruiting all his guys in the strangest way possible. Tug Phelps, Tud Beamer. Great names. Kind of remind me of that classic meme of the Japanese like Nintendo baseball game where they all had just perfect comedy names. That's a little cameo from that guy, the smaller guy there in the auto shop is Brandon Trost, the director of photography of this movie. Also a very nice and delightful person. I guess I never remembered that he has one of those removable car radios in his Miata. That's such a great touch. He has the soul of an artist. Part of what MacGruber's always loved about her. Oh, another refusal of the call to adventure. A lot of emotional baggage and sexual frisson here. And horrifying gore. She's covered in the blood of MacGruber's tragically murdered wife. Now we have a chance to get revenge. Revenge? Cunth. I forgot. That's Val Kilmer's name in this. It's Cunth. I'm at the Pentagon, written in child's handwriting. That's perfect. Crews together. Lots of machine guns and grenades. We're on the tarmac. Powers Booth looks jazzed. Feels like we got ourselves an act two about to start. Another classic MacGruber bit is his inability to shit talk without cuckolding himself somehow. This is reminiscent of the Maverick Goose chest thumping in Top Gun. I guess if you were really going to define what this movie is a parody of, it is just like macho cinema. You know, maybe I was even thinking too small by just, relating it to 90s action B movies. I mean, it's really about macho dude movies. These little nods to things like Top Gun, I feel like, are... they work and they fit because it's just such a genre that we don't really usually acknowledge or give a name to. I love how tortured MacGruber is. This is one of my all-time favorite scenes.
No, I wasn't. And nobody's gonna regret that moment.
Wonder about that. Look, I'm taking you off the case.
I'm sorry, I must have heard wrong. Because I thought I just heard you say MacGruber about that. Look, I'm taking you off the case.
That's exactly what I said.
Damn it, Jim, you can't do that. Okay, I'm the best chance you got. You told me yourself you're honest.
But the game has changed.
The game has changed.
I got no choice. You've been through a very traumatic experience. You're too close. Without a team behind you, I just can't chance it.
The emotional journey he goes on here is truly incredible. When MacGruber begged, the first time I saw this, I laughed convulsively. Like shaking in the movie theater crying laughing. It's because Forte is so vulnerable, and so you feel so sad for him despite what he's saying. Tell me what you want me to fuck. This still makes me laugh. Copy toner should work. Man, I could watch Will Forte have a breakdown all day. I mean, also a nice resetting of the stakes and expositional moment in such a funny scene. That's how you change a character's mind. I never noticed that the nightclub looks like a DeLorean logo. I also feel like it shouldn't be understated how funny of a choice it is that MacGruber drives a red Miata. My uncle, Fred, was a car dealer when I was like 11 or 12. And I'll never forget the time that he like drove all the way to my parents' house for the express purpose of showing off his red Miata convertible. I think it's perfect. I love that that's MacGruber's car. One of the things that was fun as I got to spend so much time with these guys on the college tour was learning about Ryan Phillippe's sort of dreams of being a rapper, basically. Like, that was the thing I remember taking away from my interactions with him, is that he sort of sees himself as this, like, huge hip-hop head and was, like, talking a lot. You know, I mean, he liked the movie, and he was obviously there to promote and support it, but he really liked to talk about rap music, both his own and his favorite artists. But he also was, I will say, a really a nice guy. He gave me his phone number. I still have it in my phone. Maybe the most famous person I have in my phone. I've never called him. Never found a good reason or excuse to call Ryan Phillippe. It's been, I think, about 12 years now, so I guess it would probably be weird, but it's there. If I ever need, for some reason, to reach out to Ryan Phillippe, you know, perhaps to talk about the new, you know, ASAP Ferg mixtape, I know who to call. Val's back. It's exciting. Dieter von Kunth. I love that look. You mean you don't have him? I also love the little detail that, you know, in his idle downtime, the criminal mastermind is an avid painter. That's such a thing from these, like, only from, like, a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie or something, or a Steven Seagal movie. Now that I think about it, Dieter von Kunth has shades of, you know, Val Kilmer in this, he has shades of Steven Seagal. He's got the ponytail, seems to have that sort of vague Eastern philosophy. Kristen Wiig obviously doesn't have as much to do in this movie as she does in, you know, a lot of the stuff she's done since and, you know, what she's doing now and starring in. But I feel like she, you know, she makes a lot out of those, just even those little looks and gestures. It's a pretty, like, it's a smaller performance for her, but she still manages to be really good. Large Tasso tea. It's also just so funny that, like, their first big mission is so low stakes. It's just pretending to be MacGruber buying a coffee or tea drink.
Down,
I think it also, you know, a lot has to be said. I think a big part of this movie, what makes it work so well, really is the cinematography and production design. I mean, for such a absurd, over-the-top, you know, kind of almost like Zucker Brothers level comedy at times, they still chose to visually, I think, you know, shoot this in a way that feels both kind of, you know, feels a little muted, a little grounded. It's not like big, bright, blown out, kind of like Hollywood comedy style. And then also, obviously, the really thoughtful homages to the action movies that they were pulling from. But I think just even the overall look of this movie, like, I don't know, it has kind of like a realism to it that, I don't know, somehow helps it a lot for me. Like, it's weird to mix the visual aesthetic being so kind of grounded, but then the comedy and behavior being so heightened and pushed and absurd. It's an interesting combination. Obviously, the writer-director, or one of the co-writer-director, Yorma Taccone, like, he was one of the Lonely Island guys. And I think, again, that's like, I feel like that's what they do so well, is the combination of the kind of the specific and grounded with the absurd, you know, taking these insane ideas, but then contextualizing them with something that looks and feels like the real world, with all the kind of like little texture that we can recognize. So it's like we never feel like we're just in this kind of like cartoon Hollywood movie land. It feels like there's these cartoonish, you know, Hollywood people that are somehow bumbling through the real world that we inhabit. And I don't know, it feels like you don't, you know, you don't see a lot of that. It's like comedy is either this kind of super gritty, grounded, character driven small nuanced thing, or it's just like super blown out and over the top. But this is it's an interesting mixture. I love that so much of MacGruber's strategy involves costume and impersonation. Everyone needs to be constantly impersonating someone else. I was also surprised, really, that this movie was, like, you know, such a commercial flop when it came out. Because, again, having had the experience of going with this crew and, you know, screening the movie at these, like, packed theaters of college kids for a week, you know, night after night, I mean, they were loving it. It was just, like, huge laughs. Really, it really played. And I was kind of came away from that maybe naively. I hadn't done a lot of those things before. The celery out of the ass is great. What better diversion than that? But I came out of these screenings just, you know, being like, this movie is going to be a massive hit. Like, how could it not? It's so funny. The crowd, like, young crowds were just like eating it up. And, you know, presumably the college tour was like to generate word of mouth around young people, and I just thought that was going to happen. It was going to be this kind of like meme that everyone was going to be talking about. And I was very, you know, surprised and kind of sad when it came out, and then it just never, I don't know, people didn't go see it in the movie theaters. And, you know, I'm glad at least that it did find that audience. After the fact, it makes me feel less crazy and like my own taste and sensibility isn't so far off. I think a lot of it was probably that, you know, people's awareness of this was mostly just the SNL sketch, which, you know, I think this it has the DNA of that, and it nods to it, but this is so different. And it's obviously, you know, the movie really seems to have this intention to be its own thing and expanding the, like, the world of what the sketch was into something specific. And maybe that was the thing that, like, you know, viewers just weren't expecting. And, like, I don't know. I can see how it was, like, a movie that would have been easy to write off if you were like, eh, what's this? But it's too bad because I also feel like people missed the experience of seeing this with a giant packed theater. And, like, you know, to me, there's nothing better than a comedy that kills with a giant crowd of people. I mean, yeah, like, you want to see the big Marvel and Star Wars and spectacle franchise stuff in a theater so you can see all the cool effects and the sound or whatever. But, like, for me, the real movie-going experience is to have, like, a collective, you know, emotional reaction, and comedy is like the most visceral version of that, when you're just like all convulsing in laughter at the same time. Somehow the person next to you's laughter is like only making you laugh harder. Like, that's the best feeling. And I think this movie could have delivered that for a lot of people. And it's, yeah, I don't know. It's just too bad that we had to find it on, you know, in the quiet comfort of our homes.
Looks like the cell phone's all we got. We better make the most of it. At this point, we're the only connection to the head spot. Holy shit! It's ringing! MVG, call Fraser! Call Fraser!
Set to jet, MacGruber.
Now remember, MacGruber, you gotta keep them on the line long enough to get a location.
Where? I've done this before.
You gotta keep him on the line. Just MacGruber comes in so hot. Immediately they hang up. It's so good.
Fundraising event.
We do know about Cunt's party, and we will be there with bells on.
Absolutely not, MacGruber.
Sir, I'm not going to wear bells.
No, Mac. You are not to enter that party. Right now, Cunt has no idea you're even alive.
Yes.
This is surveillance only. I want to know exactly who comes to that building.
I know that there's already talk about a MacGruber sequel series, I think they're doing, which is exciting. I don't know anything about what they're doing, but I would love, the thing I've always wanted is to see MacGruber's dad, and it's Will Ferrell. I don't know, Forte and Ferrell, I feel like, could be such an amazing comic team. Obviously they were in the SNL days, but this just feels like the kind of thing, like, they have that similar ability to take such a big heightened character and somehow make you buy it, and finding their own kind of psychotic way into it. Love that MacGruber's notepad is just the ravings of a madman. Can't KFBR 392. Oh, it's actually, it's Dieter von Kunth is the nightclub logo that looks like the DeLorean logo. I'm an idiot. You look great. Amazing turn of phrase. Speaking of Val Kilmer, I can't remember what, I don't know if it was Esquire or GQ, so I don't know. There was like a profile that came out about him about a year ago or so. It's sort of like following him as he's disappeared from acting, and just truly one of the most fascinating people. He lives a very unconventional life, and he's also, I mean, I guess he's been sick too. He's had, I forget what it was exactly, but it's kind of taken him out of acting, but he still has just like so much going on. I highly recommend reading it. I think it was Esquire. It just came out in maybe 2019. I mean, putting comedy words into Val Kilmer's mouth and letting him just play it straight, so good. It's too bad, really, that he didn't do more comedy. I mean, he did, obviously, Real Genius was incredible. But he's such a committed and intense actor that when you give him the right comedic dialogue, it is so good. I love that MacGruber's signature move is the throat rip. I do want to get a throat rip in here. I feel like so much of this commentary is just me repeating the jokes and funny moments of this movie that I like so much. Sorry about that, but yeah. I love, too, how just enraged he is that this radio is a Blaupunkt. That's so funny to me. I think I also had a Blaupunkt in my first car in high school when I was a teenager. Great radio. Don't know if they still make them. Oh, look, that's Marielle Heller. as like a background actress at that party. She's married to Jorma Taccone, and also, you know, the director of the Mr. Rogers movie and Diary of a Teenage Girl. She's like done a ton of great stuff and a big acting role in The Queen's Gambit. I'm very impressed with her. It seems like a very talented person. I think one of the great things about this also is that Powers Booth is basically just playing exactly a character that he would in a normal action movie. Like, it's such a straight man where it's just like every line, his whole performance is like, he's not trying to do anything comedically, but that actually makes it so funny. the subtitle for "You're Loco, Man." I totally forgot about that, but that is so funny. One of the really fun things about traveling with these guys during that college trip was, you know, they were in the midst of promoting the movie, so Will and Jorma were always kind of trying to come up with, you know, tweets, and this is kind of like early Twitter, and MacGruber had an amazing Twitter account. I think it was at MacGrubes69, I believe. But, you know, he would just tweet completely in character, and it was just kind of fun watching them, like, pitch and sort of brainstorm on the psychotic shit that MacGruber would be tweeting about. I mean, even when the movie came out and it was kind of a failure financially in the theaters, I still remember, like on the official MacGruber account, they tweeted something. MacGruber tweeted something like, you know, I guess I shit the bed real bad at the box office. Like, it was, you know, even this kind of moment of defeat or humiliation, they stayed in character about it. It really, really made me laugh. I love that he uses Philip he as a human shield. I mean, Philip he's taken, I don't know, about 400 bullets there. Look. Again, the Miata, the red Miata, is just a choice that keeps working through the movie. I mean, it's such a stupid thing, but I feel like you get so much extra comedy mileage out of it every time he's in it and sulking or having some dramatic moment. It's just like 5% funnier because he's in a red Miata. They really linger on that cut for so long. Or the bullet wound. It also amazes me to think that, like, only a few short years after this, Forte did Nebraska. Like, so far from MacGruber tonally. And, like, his performance just so different, so understated, like, just this kind of everyman, normal guy. You know, a Midwesterner. Just kind of a boring dude, and I don't know, it's kind of an incredible range to think about the insanity of MacGruber to the sort of sad sack Nebraska guy. Oh god, I forgot about this. This is, I mean, a truly pitch perfect parody of, like, late 80s to mid 90s Skinamax, and like all those I feel like all those action movies, I don't know, maybe they're running together in my head, but I feel like they all had this one, like, gratuitous sex scene where the fucking badass action karate dude was just also this, like, super sensitive gentle lover. I mean, that shot of the sweaty butt, and then the hard cut to him bleeding like a goat. Oh my god. I mean, I can't think of that many other, like, great comedy set piece sex scenes. Like, this goes so long and it is so funny. again, Miata. I feel like you could watch this movie and have a pretty decent drinking game of just drinking every time you see the red Miata. Sounds like a nice Saturday. Oh my god. I really appreciate all the stuff that I forgot about this. Like him fucking the ghost of his wife in the graveyard. And there's nobody there. Like. Oh my god. I don't know how to comment on this other than it's perfect. It's the funniest thing that has ever been committed to film. Go for groups.
Good news. Holly.
You see, didn't tell that Russian special forces have been covered yet.
That's great.
I want to be there when you take Hunt down.
We were wrong about Nazis not involved. It was Chechen rebels.
It's a pretty good example of hiding the kind of nonsense exposition and just like a funny set piece. Like this whole runner with the guy with the license plate that he hates. It just kind of leads to this call where it's just a huge information dump to move the plot forward. Man, Powers Booth. I mean, as silly as this movie is, I think one of the reasons that it kind of has a special place in my heart was on, you know, this trip that I took with these guys. At the time, I was writing comedy stuff on the internet. I was basically a glorified blogger. But I was aspiring to, you know, write for film and television and things like that. And so, you know, we would screen this movie every night. And every night after the screening, they would do a Q&A with the college kids. And, you know, invariably, like, most of the questions were some version of, like, well, how do I make it in Hollywood, too? And multiple times I saw Yorma give the answer of just like from his experience, he kind of had to like have a willingness to just be broke for a while and just like get good at, you know, writing and directing and making stuff and, you know, accepting the fact that he was just not going to like make a living at it and just, you know, he's going to have to do what he had to do to get by. And it's funny because like I was on this trip for like a company that I was working at that was like doing these like shitty celebrity blogs and I was really hating it. And I think hearing him give that advice night after night, it truly was this thing that like resonated in me where I was like, yeah, like if I want to do this, the kind of easy paycheck that I'm getting to do this bullshit that I hate, that also like distracts me from like, you know, writing or working on the kind of stuff I want to be doing. I, you know, when I got back from that tour, I think I stayed at the company for maybe another month or so, but it was kind of the thing in a weird way, MacGruber, that led me to this decision to just kind of like take a leap of faith, quit my job and really give, you know, writing a full effort. And, you know, my success has been mixed since then. I've had ups and downs, but overall, you know, I am doing what I wanted to do. Certainly much enjoy what I'm doing much more than, you know, writing like snarky blog posts about the Kardashians or whatever. So yeah, I think in some sick way, MacGruber was a very influential film for my own trajectory, which I don't know how many other people would say that. I wish they made more movies like this that just like, I think part of the fun of these things is like you don't, because the tone is as like heightened and pushed as it is, you just like don't have to fuck around with grounding everything. And it's like, especially in this sequence in the movie, as they're kind of, you're getting towards the end of the second act and driving into the third, they can just kind of like efficiently and quickly move the plot forward. And we don't, there's just not this like worry about the suspension of disbelief that I feel like most other kinds of films you kind of have to adhere to. There's like, there just has to be like a fun and freedom in that. I guess the reason is like most comedies that don't, you know, respect the audience's intelligence end up just being so preposterously stupid without the, you know, hilarious payoffs that this movie has. But it feels like it's part of that tradition of like the Naked Gun movies and Airplane and Zucker Brothers, like just the sort of insane slapstick that's just so funny, Mel Brooks, you know, that's so funny that it can kind of get away with anything. I feel like that's like a dying art form that we just, this is maybe one of the last great examples of that. I struggle to think of anything even that recently that really does this well. And it's like, even though this is whatever, 10 years old, it still holds up. It's like a really fun watch. It seems like the recipe here is really just like you get one big insane character in MacGruber, a little bit Vicky, you know, Kristen Wiig's character is also kind of pushed, but then just surrounding them with, you know, real dramatic actors kind of doing their thing, playing the straight characters to give, you know, to bounce off of MacGruber. And I find that really effective. It's like, you get away with so much more. Whereas if it was like MacGruber and a comedic ensemble, I think that might push it too far into just like nonsense, you know, where you're not grounded in anything. I guess that's one thing that the movie version of MacGruber kind of neglects or let go of, you know, in an interesting way, which is like the sketch obviously was such a parody of MacGyver and like his whole, like, I can get us out of any situation by making some crazy invention with whatever I have in my pocket. And the movie doesn't rely that much on that. I mean, this sequence is like really the one part where he's kind of doing that. I guess it's good because it's like, that's such a limiting joke. Like, how are you going to sustain for an hour and a half just like him making contraptions out of nonsense? But I think it's really smart that they sort of just like, again, like, reimagine the character. Don't be like beholden to like this one dimension of what it is and what it has been on TV and then open it up to something else. I mean, like him waving around Uzis, you would never see MacGyver do that, but also who gives a shit? It's just like, this is way more a parody of, you know, macho action movies than it is MacGyver. I love that. This is so awesome. This is so much better than the stupid fucking gadgets I used to make. I mean, that's all you need right there. That one line like justifies the whole choice to like get away from just the gadget thing. I also love that he's just aiming wildly in no particular direction. This song and the score right now, this like guitar lick thing, it feels very like almost like Top Gun. Nice little music cue. I love that the end of their friendship arc is him allowing MacGruber to do a throat rip. That is growth. A pot sticker, a Molson. I mean, even the throwaway lines in this movie are unreal. So good.
tonight.
Oh, that sounds like a real fun Tuesday, but I've already got other plans. See, in about 4 minutes, I'm going to turn Washington, D.C. into a pile of ash. And then I've got a big pile of money.
How do you make money killing millions of innocent people?
Really? I thought that was clear. Someone pays me to do it? See, I can't say who because I would be gossiping.
It's the Chinese.
You make me sick. This. Oh, I'm not doing it. You are.
You're mad.
You're mad. Incensed, disillusioned by a government you blame for the death of your wife. You're transmuting.
If I seem to remember correctly, Kilmer is a method, like a hardcore method actor. And so that one makes me wonder if, like, in this scene, has he, like, convinced himself of this shit to be able to play it? I want to believe that that's true. I want to believe that he spent a long time in his process concocting this story about the Chinese needing to annihilate Washington. Oh man, MacGruber's Dark Night of the Soul, having his mullet cut off by Val Kilmer. Now it's a revenge movie. That's a great thing. That shaking, that's like a classic Van Damme move, the slow motion furious shaking right before the triumphant fatality move and the hero gets back on his feet. I love that. Well, if nothing else, they got Ryan Phillippe to put a stalk of celery up his butt. But let's be real, that was a stunt butt. I mean, it's like the whole movie up to this point has built to this moment where we are now like just in one of the SNL sketches with the siren going off, the clock ticking, the bomb. You know, it's elegant that the climax of the movie is the literal premise of the sketches. More like a three-wire guy.
Right again.
so I can switch your work. And your prize will be getting blown to smithereens. In about how long this is going to
take? 32 seconds!
Oh, we better scoot. We do have a wedding to plan.
Let's move.
Would love to see, like, if Yorma and the director Brandon did like some kind of lookbook, pulling like specific lighting and camera references from a bunch of these films. I mean, some of these sequences, like even that little shot where they're kind of slow-mo running through the like dramatically lit factory, it just feels like you've seen that before. And I don't know if that's just the kind of the brilliance of their parody, that it just sort of feels generically familiar. But I also wonder if there are like what actual specifics they were pulling from those movies. The ghosts of the crew and a severely burned Val Kilmer. Oh man. Love that too, that on the explosion they throw in the tiger roar sound effect. Man, the guy that was marrying them took that rocket, I think. Just covered in blood. Poor dude. Genuinely disturbing. I mean, this right here is why you get Val Kilmer. Whatever his quote is, it's worth it for the scene where he's been burned up and makes his one last villainous stand against MacGruber, reveals that he doesn't have a dick to cut off. Worth every penny. Fuck you, dude. Fuck you, dude. Good. Well, this has been a true pleasure. I guess I will sign off before Amazon Prime pushes me into the Truman Show, which is up next, and I start talking about that. But yeah, if you haven't seen MacGruber, or if you're like me and it's been a while, I highly recommend. It stands up. It's great. It's one of the funniest movies ever. Cool. All right. Bye.
And so there you have it. If you've made it this far, you are in an amazing mood, aren't you? MacGruber, courtesy of Will Forte, Yorma Taccone, and this week's commentary by Alex Blagg. As always, tis I, Paul Davidson, saying thank you once again for listening. And don't forget the three R's of podcast success, as far as I'm concerned. Review, rate, and retweet. Please share the word, tell your friends, and we'll see you next week here on The Sidetrack.